Hello, this is Ken Root. People in the Know is brought to you by Concept by Iowa Hearing, a fitting sponsor since this week's show is about listening to frogs. That's right. Can you identify frog species by just listening? And why would you want to? That's ahead. Concept by Iowa Hearing is dedicated to your hearing needs. Contact them at iowahearing.com or by calling 877-955-4020 for a free hearing screening.
This spring, maybe here in the very near future, you're going to hear some familiar sounds, especially in little ditches, little places where there's some water standing, amphibians making a familiar and loud noise. Those are frogs and toads, and they are, of course, beginning their very strong desire of the males to lure in females for mating. The frogs and toads, apparently, are a key to reading the overall health of our environment. And all of this, to me, comes from the Iowa DNR and from other sources that I have read, which fascinate me. So I decided I'd find somebody who actually knows about these things and has an upcoming survey that we as the public could be a part of. Stephanie Shepherd, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
You are a wildlife diversity biologist with Iowa DNR. You're based over in the Boone area. How long have you been with DNR?
I've been with the DNR since December of 2005, so almost 19 years, and all those times I've coordinated the department's frog and toad call survey, which has actually been going on since 1991, so it's a long-running survey.
Why is it that you need to know how many of these little creatures are out there?
The survey was started in the early 90s because there was growing concern throughout the 70s and 80s about amphibian declines across the world. People were seeing a lot of population declines, and the Frog and Toad Call Survey was developed to try and give us at kind of the state scale an idea of what was going on with our amphibians here in Iowa. And frogs and toads are only one part of the amphibians. We also have salamanders in the state, but they don't sing, the salamanders don't, and they like to spend a lot of their time underground or in the muck of a wetland, so they're a little bit harder to survey than the frogs, who make themselves easy to monitor by, you know, making these really loud and distinctive calls every spring and early summer.
You call this singing. It's low notes and not very many of them, but they're really good at it. I'm amazed at how a little bitty frog can make such a loud noise. As a biologist, could you give me any mechanics of that?
Well, so they, if you've ever seen a picture of a frog or toad calling, you can Google it, you will see that, and it depends on the species, but they generally have really large air sacs, usually in their throat or to the sides. And when they're making the call, those things balloon out and become huge, which helps to amplify the sound and, get it, help them make a noise that seems like it shouldn't be possible for such a small creature.
Maybe the original bagpipe builder came up with that concept, and the cacophony of it is sometimes amazing. I recall being in Branson, Missouri one time, and we were at a little resort with a hotel pool, and we were trying to talk outside at night. No one else was around. And this frog was making this incredibly loud noise. And so I said to my friend, "My God, how big that frog must be." And he said, "No, he's right over there." And he was about an inch long. Is that possible?
Yes. And in fact, like, some of our loudest frogs in the state are our tiniest, We have three members of what I call the tiny little frog, you know, clan. And one of them is our earliest caller. It's the one that you're most likely to be hearing now. Maybe not this week, but they were definitely heard calling last week when it was a little bit warmer. And that is the chorus frog. They're about the size of your thumbnail. They're really great at taking advantage of those ditches and things that get water in the spring and, you know, maybe don't hold it all summer, but, you know, kind of fill up in the spring, and they take advantage of those temporary spots and congregate in big numbers and call like crazy. They sound like running your finger across a fine tooth comb. Is kind of how their song is called. And they're almost always the earliest and frog that people hear. They're also the most widespread and abundant in the state.
Well, we've got the capability here because you've come up with these sounds and recorded them to play these various frog species. So let's play you just a little bit of the chorus frog for you to get a feel for just what Stephanie's been talking about. Okay, now that sounded to me like it was recorded in the wild. There's some other noise in with it. Is that true?
Yes, frogs and toads, you know, they you will have multiple species, you know, calling at some sites. They do have different habitat preferences based on the species, but of course, a lot of times those preferences overlap. So, you do have sites where you'll have, you know, multiple species calling at one time.
The female, I take it, is the goal for the male to be able to mate with her. And, I've heard that in some species, the female is much larger than the male. And the key for the male is to have the best sound. Is that true?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't know that many of our Iowa species, there's a huge size difference. There may be a little bit of one, but yes. So what the male frogs are doing is basically announcing like who they are, that they're of a particular species. You know, their calls are unique by the species. And so the female can key in on that. And of course, the louder they are, the farther, you know, reach they can get and, you know, attract females or, you know, make them aware that they're around. And then also females are probably making decisions, you know, subconsciously or instinctively about like what the quality of the habitat looks like. Is it a good place to lay eggs? That kind of thing, as well as like, you know, some do probably make some judgments about the male frog based on how strong their call is, how long they can call and stuff like that. But for a lot of frog breeding, there's not a lot of choice going on necessarily.
You're kind of making it sound like frogs and women have a lot in common. but it's the wrong era to get into that. I was all wondering if the Budweiser frogs are out there. Remember that?
Yeah.
Budweiser. That's the bullfrog. And the bullfrog, to me, has the most distinctive sound, I guess. Of course, I have looked for bullfrogs to hunt, to kill, and frog legs, which to me are delicious. Let's play a sound of a bullfrog here, and then see if you'll tell me something about that. Here's what they sound like in the wild. Okay, give me a little overview of bullfrogs, because they're probably the ones we recognize, the maybe other than a leopard frog, the most instinctively.
Yeah, sure. And bullfrogs are really fascinating, actually. They have a lot of interesting stuff about them. Like, first of all, they're one of the latest calling species. They don't really start calling until like June and into July. You may hear a few towards the end of May. So they really take their time. And part of that is because they actually spend 2 years as tadpoles. So, you know, the female lays eggs, those develop into tadpoles in a particular summer, and then they overwinter as tadpoles, and then finish their metamorphosis the following year. So because of that, that sort of determines where they can use to breed, because they need more permanent bodies of water than some of the other frog species do. They also are kind of fascinating because they're a little bit invasive in Iowa. So they were originally native just to southeastern Iowa, but because of people and our, you know, love for frog legs, as well as like interest, you know, kind of familiarity with bullfrogs, probably were the biggest culprits in moving them around the state and making them statewide. And most of the time this is okay, but they are a very large frog and pretty voracious eaters. So they will eat anything that fits in their mouth. So that means tiny little frogs, tadpoles, eggs of other frogs and stuff. So sometimes if they move into a wetland, you can start seeing the, you know, the smaller frog species disappear or go down in numbers in that area. So they can be a bit of a problem in some areas, but, you know, still definitely a really distinctive species and a very distinctive call for sure. I describe it as sounding like a foghorn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've never thought of bullfrog depredation, but that is of interest. If you go to some other frogs, let me go with one here, the leopard frog. Those seem to be further from the water and pretty widespread. Here's what they sound like. What's your overview of the leopard frog in Iowa?
So there's actually three species of leopard frog in Iowa, which is a lot of people don't realize. And the one that's most widespread across the entire state is the northern leopard frog. Like it occurs everywhere in the state. And they are also like the chorus frog, an early caller. So they're calling kind of at the same time chorus frogs do, but not in as many locations. They're a little pickier about their habitat. And one thing, especially as we're doing this frog and toad call survey, you know, that we have to be careful of when we're listening for frogs is that leopard frogs, their call is much like deeper and kind of softer. Like actually the smaller chorus frog makes much more racket, as well as like the small spring peeper that is often calling at the same time. So you really have to like be paying attention and really be listening to catch the leopard frogs calling during the springtime.
What's another species that you may like?
Yeah, a couple of frogs that call in the kind of the middle part of the season. So they're not some of the earliest frogs, but like they're kind of the next wave that come in that I really like are the gray tree frogs. We have two species in the state, but they are identical in appearance. They only differ in the number of chromosomes that they have. So unless you have a genetics lab, you're not really going to be able to tell the difference between them. But you can tell their difference between their call as well. They have a slightly different call, and it's the Cope's gray tree frog and the Eastern gray tree frog. And these guys are really cool. If you've ever had a frog, they're a true tree frog. They have big suction cups on the ends of their toes. And if you've ever had a frog stuck to your storm door or a window, it was probably a gray tree frog. And sometimes you'll notice if you look at pictures, though, they're called gray tree frogs, but they look green. And that is because they also have the ability to change their coloring based on kind of where they're hanging out, to blend in with their environment. So if they're sitting on a plant that's green, oftentimes they will look green. But then if they're on something, you know, else, like bark of a tree, they will fade, you know, they'll go back to gray and fade into their environment. So that's a really cool thing. They also have overwintering. They have a particular substance in their blood that helps them. They can almost freeze solid during the wintertime and still survive.
Stephanie Shepherd is my guest. She's with Iowa DNR. She is a non-game species biologist. Wildlife diversity is the title. And Stephanie, just a moment, we'll come back. And I want to talk to you about how this survey can go and how people can help with it and some other questions and ideas that I've got for you.
Let's take a moment to talk with Taylor Parker, president of Concept by Iowa Hearing. Taylor, is there a correlation between an untreated hearing loss and balance, or a greater chance of falling in older people?
You are very correct in that, Ken. Individuals that have even a mild hearing loss, the risk of falling triples. And every 10 decibels that your hearing loss worsens, it increases your risk by 140%. So a mild untreated loss triples your risk. Every 10 decibels, 140% greater for every 10 decibels. So by the time you get to a severe or, profound, you're talking, your chances of falling are extremely high. And how that comes into play, we talked about dementia before and, that it pulls from cognitive, but the other area that your brain pulls resources from to focus on untreated hearing loss is balance and gait. So the ability, you think about, when you get up from a chair, you don't think about getting up. Your brain says, well, I need to get up. You get up and go. Individuals that now have the risk of falling, they have to brace themselves. They have to, use support. They actually have to think about getting up from things or making that move of, well, I'm going to go from here to here. Or, they're out on a walk and having that spatial awareness of who's around them or what's around them, they lose that ability to hear that. So they lose that ability. One of the big ones was Jack Campbell's grandfather down at the bowl game. He was going to step out on the street and he didn't hear his family tell him to not cross the street. And, falls are the leading cause of accidental death in adults over the age of 65. So we're not talking individuals, 80 and 90 years old, which, they do fall in this category because typically they have a hearing loss and their balance and gait's a little more off. But we're talking the age of 65 and above is something that, a lot of individuals need to, understand and, understand how it all plays into every, everyday life.
Thank you, Taylor. Schedule your free hearing screening at Concept by Iowa Hearing. You can reach them at 877-955-4020. Or online at iowahearing.com.
Well, let's go back to the frogs and the toads. Stephanie, what's the difference between a toad and a frog?
Well, the main difference, so toads are frogs, like they're all kind of under that umbrella, but toads are specified or, split out because they are a little different in that we see them more frequently outside of water. But the big difference or the way to tell a toad from a frog is they have this actually big gland that's called a parotid gland behind their eye on their back. And that's the thing, it excretes a toxin. So, there's all these old wives' tales about toads
warts.
Give you warts and they can irritate your hand. And it's from that toxin from the parotid gland. They won't give you warts, but they will, potentially, irritate your hand or give you a little rash. It's also, it's a defense mechanism against being eaten. They excrete that and it is not very pleasant for anything trying to eat them.
Let's go back to what you were saying earlier about taking these surveys of these frogs and toads, amphibians across the state, and trying to equate that to the health of the environment. I'm located up on the Mississippi River, Pool 10 around Guttenberg, and it seems like that area has had an improvement in water quality, and the fishing has become really good of late. And I wonder if you can equate this in any way to either the man's intervention or man's pollution into the environment or natural changes in the environment or anything else that could, within the comprehension of those of us who don't know nearly as much about this as you, understand why that these are, instead of the canary in the coal mine, they're the toad in the hole, perhaps, that would tell you if the environment for us is being threatened.
Sure. So I think it's a little looser than maybe, you know, it's not a direct like correlation. But the reason why we talk about frogs giving us, or amphibians giving us an idea of what's going on with the environment, is because where they live, and then also their skin is basically really porous and kind of moist and stuff. It's very sensitive, basically, to what's in their environment. So, you know, pollution, increased like UVB rays can negatively affect them, things like that. Now, there are some frog species that, you know, use pretty like gross looking little water holes. So, you know, it's a little bit hard to say that they, you know, only use pristine wetlands and stuff. But the overall health of amphibians definitely is telling us something about the overall health of our environment. You know, it might be hard to draw that connection at the scale of Iowa, but it's definitely the case, you know, on a global scale.
Well, for the remainder of our time, let's talk about how that those people who wish to, who love nature and want to go out there, preferably, I take it, in the evening hours, and listen to these frogs, can help you to survey them. I mean, we're into surveys of various kinds that are really made a lot easier now by technology. People in your own office there have got this program that they can use to have you document the fish you catch, and it tells where it is, and then the picture you send in tells the size of it, and they can dig in further. But I came up with names for this survey, Stephanie, and feel free to use any of these.
Okay.
They are frog listeners, toad tuners, and amphibian audio auditors.
Oh, I like that one. That's a good one.
So what can people do, seriously, to be able to help you?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, this is not a new survey. It's been going on since 1991. So it's a really long data set, and we have a lot of just really amazing volunteers, some of them who have been participating in the survey since the 90s. So really long time. But then we also welcome new volunteers each year. You know, just to give you an example of what they accomplished, like last year, 135 survey routes were surveyed, which covered about 850 wetland sites across the state. So they're, you know, really able to spread out and collect a lot of data in a lot of different locations, which we wouldn't be able to do ourselves, you know, in the DNR. So we require that folks that are interested in becoming a amphibian auditory auditor, is that what you call, what did you call them?
No, it's an amphibian audio auditor. You're close.
Okay, amphibian audio auditor, go through a training, and we have two trainings, in-person trainings left in different parts of the state, and they're specifically in those parts of the state where we actually need more volunteers and where we don't have a lot of data being collected. So one is on April 3rd down in Montgomery County in southwest Iowa, which didn't have any routes surveyed last year. And then the other one is up in Mitchell County on April 10th. And, you know, we don't have any routes being surveyed in Mitchell, Floyd, Chickasaw, or Howard County up there. So you don't have to be from those areas to attend one of those workshops, but that's kind of why they're placed in those locations, is we're hoping to get some folks from that area. You know, 3-hour long workshop, it's pretty intensive, but you will walk away, you know, knowing all the frog and toad calls and having a better idea of what it takes to participate in the survey.
Can people find this on your DNR website?
Yeah, so if you go to iowadnr.gov/VWMP, that page has all of our kind of community science-based data collection efforts, including the Frog and Toad Call Survey, and you can register on that page for one of those two remaining workshops.
Do you coordinate this further with other states or with any other federal departments that give them a bigger picture than just being in Iowa?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And a number of other states do have frog and toad call surveys. There was a national effort between 1998 and 2015 run by the U.S. Geological Survey. But unfortunately, they ran out of funding and weren't able to continue it. But we still have some of the routes that were part of that effort, you know, as part of our data collection. And, you know, like I said, numerous states are collecting the data. So it's definitely available for any researchers or, you know, other folks that are interested in kind of combining it and looking at it at the big picture level.
Well, I am amazed at the interest of the public in various aspects like this. And I happened to see online the other day that there's a, for birds, okay, you can correlate it if you want, but this is just my story, that there's a mechanism by which you can put out this microphone that then goes into a program that recognizes bird calls and translates them into what that bird is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made the mistake of going to a little club a while back that had birders there, and I brought it up. And they act like it was a gift from God that they have this, and the extreme excitement about this sort of stuff is amazing. So it's not, to me, maybe the technology, it's the people. There are people out there that love this sort of thing, and you give them a project, and they'll take it like old people run any club that they're a part of. Are you finding that you have some really dedicated people who love to do this survey?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we can't express how grateful we are to the many people that do this. It's not a survey for everyone. Like you were mentioning, it's done at night. You know, you have to find the time to do it three times throughout the spring and summer. You have to lurk around, you know, in a creepy way around on gravel roads and stuff. You know, so it's not for everyone. And I am just always inspired and amazed by all the people that are willing to do that in order to contribute to the conservation of these species. And they're really an inspiration and just amazing that they dedicate their time. And I think it's a good indicator, you know, what you were saying and from the Frog and Toad Call Survey, that, you know, people really connect with wildlife and it enriches their lives, and they recognize that. So.
Well, Stephanie Shepherd, I thank you for talking with me. You were very responsive to be able to do so for this podcast and this radio program. You're based in Boone with Iowa DNR, a wildlife diversity biologist. And give me again how people can get more information from your department. I know there's a news release out. That's how I picked it up, on the toad and frog population surveys. But where else can they go on your website?
iowadnr.gov/VWMP. You can also, you know, do a search on our website. There, we have a page that has a lot of the more common species calls on it, a little sound library of some of the frog calls. So if you're interested in hearing some of those, you can, you know, search frog and toad calls on the site and get to that page as well.
Stephanie, thank you very much, and may you have a good spring, summer, and fall of 2024.
Thank you very much. You too. Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to People in the Know. I'm on the hunt for guests to interview. If you have suggestions, contact me at this email address, kenroot@gmail.com, kenroot@gmail.com. Have a great week.